Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on Monday, July the 3rd. Happy 4th of July weekend, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. Of course, you can check out the show all the time on MetsMorizedOnline.com. You can send me a tweet at Mike Silvamedia, and you can get the show on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Leave me a review on iTunes. It's always greatly appreciated. Hope everybody's doing well. Pretty fun show, I think, for you today. Had a chance to record a couple of pieces yesterday. Decided to come out with this morning instead of Sunday just because wanted to see what was going to happen with the All-Star announcements. Congratulations to Michael Conforto, his first All-Star game, and hopefully many more. And it looks like the Mets may very well have themselves a solidified, homegrown, high-end offensive piece for the foreseeable future, something that they really haven't had since David Wright went down. So the All-Star coronation is a long way from where Michael was a year ago in Vegas and being sent down and essentially at this time last year looking lost. So got that information, got that news in a little bit. I had a chance to catch up with Zach Brazilier of the New York Post. He was out at Citi Field. Wanted to get his take. Is there a new hope around the New York Mets? This is before the Mets went out and lost to the Phillies yesterday, but still some good chunks in there for us to digest. And then to wrap up the program, we're going to address some of the comments made by Ron Darling earlier this week. Ron had something during the broadcast, had a lot to say after Robert Gazelman went down with a hamstring injury about the modern-day weightlifting and training philosophies that you see out there in most major league clubhouses, and specifically with the Mets under Mike Barwis and his consultation. BarwisMethods.com, if you want to check him out, that's who's basically running the Mets strength and conditioning, injury prevention, injury recovery program. So our buddy from he's written over at MetsMorizedOnline.com, Chris, he was on the show last year, former college athlete, really nailed last year what to expect out of David Wright and the spinal stenosis. And he's been pretty passionate. He's been on Twitter and he's been talking about, hey, this is what the problem is with the current Mets strength and conditioning philosophy. And he also is going to educate us a little bit about why it's not Ray Ramirez's fault as the trainer and maybe some of the type of training these Mets are doing that could be creating an issue or an imbalance that essentially will lead to, you know, some core injuries that you have seen. So Chris will be on, and I had a chance to catch up with him yesterday, and you'll hear that in just a little bit. I don't really have much to say. I know that sometimes I could go on quite a bit during these intros. And I'm going to keep it brief because it's such an odd with difficult situation right now to assess. Mets are now halfway through the schedule. They're an under 500 team. And as you guys know, until a team really hits 500, and I've said this to you a million times, I can't really take them seriously as a playoff contender. Now, yes, they are seven games out of a wild card spot. And they have, other than the Cubs, they don't really have teams in front of them that I feel, even in this current state, that the Mets or can't be better than. They're nine games out of the division, and the Nationals are probably more fallible now than they've ever been. They're more vulnerable than they've ever been. They lost Trey Turner for a broken wrist. I don't know if that's for the year, but that's going to be a significant amount of time. They already lost their leadoff man, Adam Eaton, for the year with an ACL injury back in late April, early May. The bullpen over there is a mess. But listen, the Nationals are a well-run team. They have a good manager. They still have their core offensive players in Murphy and Harper, and Zimmerman's had an outstanding year. And they're a grinder team, so I don't expect them to go anywhere, but they're vulnerable. And I've always felt they're vulnerable if the Mets actually went out there and prepared for the season and kind of came out with the mindset that they're out there from day one to win the division. I don't think the Nationals are going anywhere, but in order to beat them, you had to be at your best throughout the whole season. Now, they're not at their best. Does that mean the Mets have a shot at the division? I don't know. Nine games is not impossible. It's not impossible to overcome. And you do have the Familia coming back, the idea that Familia is going to come back. And I don't know what role he'll play. I don't think you just throw him into the closer role. But he should be back within the next month. I don't know what to say about Syndergaard, but you got to wonder if he'll be back sooner rather than later. But you would think they'd maybe get him back sometime for September. I think they would probably play that conservatively, and even if they were in the race and there was any question about how he can come back this year from the lat, they probably would say, no, I'm not going to bring Syndergaard back. So that might be something that will be discussed later on. The offense has never been the problem. The offense has been good all year. It's a bit of a bully offense. You saw them go brown out yesterday. But for the most part, since maybe after the first couple of weeks when the weather was awful here on the East Coast, the offense has been out there scoring, four or five runs a game. Even if they're down two or three runs, you don't feel they're completely out of it. And that probably will be the case the rest of the year, provided that they stay healthy. And you got Cespedes back to this offense that, he hasn't gotten going, but for the most part has been successful without Cespedes, because Cespedes went down. The final piece is the one that is the trickiest part. And the reason why I'm when you talk about a new hope or the Mets making a move here, they've won 7 out of 10, they've made up ground, is the pitching. Now you have a situation where your starters are not a given every night. You have DeGrom, who has finally rounded into form, and I keep saying that's the ace of the staff. That's the guy that I would invest in. You have Mats and Lugo, who I think are very good pitchers. But as twos and threes, I'm not sure I feel comfortable with them coming back from injuries, and they haven't shown – I mean, Lugo hasn't shown over a course of a full season that he can do what he can do, and he does have a partially tore ligament in his elbow, so that's always something that's going to be there, similar to Tanaka across town. And Mats, I think you always know, has top-of-the-rotation stuff, but he has yet to stay healthy. So I don't have a problem with those guys, but obviously right now – they're not givens, but you got to go with what you have. And then you have your Montero and Wheeler back part of the rotation, which right now Wheeler I thought was a guy, okay, give you 5-6 innings, 1-2-run ball, I'll take it. It's going to be a night where the bullpen's going to be used, but I'll take it. He has regressed. Now, whether that's tendonitis, he's hit a wall from Tommy John surgery, maybe he's not all that good. There's a little bit of everything on there. I've never been a big Wheeler guy. I don't criticize the move when they traded Beltran for Wheeler, but from the day that they acquired him, looking at his mechanics, knowing that he'd be an injury risk, when he came up, the long innings, the lack of command at times, the amount of walks that he puts out there on a night-in and night-out basis, I was always lukewarm about Wheeler. And then Montero. Look, Montero yesterday did what you would expect a fifth starter to do. 6 innings, 3-4 runs. I mean, that's what you probably would have gotten from Tommy Malone if he was in there. That's very well if you sign Bartolo Colon, what you may get. And everybody's all about signing Bartolo Colon, and I'm fine with that. Look, once he clears waivers, you bring him back, you never know. I mean, maybe Bartolo because of the kind of player he is at this time of his career, needs to be in an environment where he feels comfortable, where he gets that energy. Is he done? I mean, this thing happens overnight. You saw it with Tom Glavine. Once you're north of 40, there's going to be one day where you just lose it. And Bartolo's not exactly the most well-conditioned athlete. So could he come back here and help? I think they could probably use him as a bridge in the sixth or seventh inning for the bullpen. Can he go multiple times, back-to-back days? I know that the playoffs, that was something that they were able to do, but there were days off in the playoffs. If you look at his playoff game log, they were able to space him out a little bit. He didn't pitch all that much in the Chicago series. He was really big in the Dodgers series. So you don't know if consistently he can do that. And it'd be hard for me to say. Can he be a value to that rotation? Certainly on the upside, he's going to be better than Wheeler or Montero because of what you saw last year. But also, let's remember, Colon was a below-league average pitcher most of his career here. He was good last year, and he was good all 3 years he was here, but he was very feast or famine where he'd be very good. But against a good American League offense or a good offense, especially on the road in general, he got lit up, and that's where his numbers, I guess, were skewed a little bit to being not quite as good as what you visually probably saw. So you have a rotation, even if you import a Colon, that's going to be very shaky, that's going to need the offense to score. You saw that today. And then there's the bullpen, a bullpen that even when it's stacked, and it's never really been in Colon's tenure, he mismanages it. And now he's got to put a lot of critical thinking into that. They struggle, and they're certainly going to struggle on days where the starter can't get out of the fourth or fifth inning. It really burns the bullpen for the rest of the game and then into the next day or maybe 2 days. They've got a guy in there, Neil Ramirez, which I can't tell you why he's still on a big league roster when you have arms in Vegas that I probably give more of an opportunity to do. Eric Goodell is a name that finally got a shot, and he, not that Goodell is great, but you heard Russ Langer on the program a couple of weeks ago that he thought he was somebody to keep an eye on. He's been okay since he came back. So you got a lot of guys that need to be put in the right spot to be successful. And you don't have a manager that's his forte. It's just not. His forte is keeping everybody calm, giving them calm and comfort and shelter from all the big bad media and the big bad world. And he hopes that by doing that, that he's partnered with them, that they'll go out there and play hard from every day. And in the end, the results will show. He's been right the last 2 years. I don't think he's going to be right this year. And I don't know if there's a trade to be had that could help that. Because right now you have Addison Reed. Maybe you have Familia in 30 days. You have Paul Sewald, who I think is a lot better than his stats have indicated, and I like a lot. You've got Jerry Blevins. You've got Josh Edgen, who could be an earlier in the game situation lefty. And that's it. Salas stinks. You don't know what you're going to get out of Goodell. Jason Bradford is an unknown, but at least they're giving him a shot. He's been not impressive since he came up. You just heard about Neil Ramirez. You have a bad bullpen, and you have a manager that doesn't really know how to manage a bullpen. That's a lethal combination. So you're going to need 7 innings out of your starters, and realistically, you probably could only get it out of 3 of them, and that doesn't mean you're going to get it every night. I mean, that's just certainly not going to get it every night. Maybe when Gazelman comes back, he could be a solution in the bullpen. You mentioned Colon. So the reason why this is a tricky spot is because you really don't have the foundation to feel good about a team being able to compete and do that. Because they're going to have to win 6 and 7 out of 10 over the next couple of weeks to really motor this back to where it needs to be. And you've got Colorado coming back to the pack. You got to think Chicago is going to eventually level out and go to where they need to be, which is 10 games over and above. I don't think they're going to be a 500 team all year. Milwaukee hasn't gone away yet. So you got to play at a pretty high level. And I think if you want to win 90 games, you're going to have to win 52 games here in the second half. And that's over 600 baseball. And I know you guys say, well, they did it last year for 6 weeks. Well, the competition was really light. And they, even though they were 60 and 62, they didn't have the hole that they have right now when it comes down to it. I just don't know if this is a team, and I keep going back to investing, that this front office will invest in, which means do they go out? Do they try to get an arm as you get closer to the deadline? Do they stand pat? See, that's the interesting part. If I'm running the team, and I think that it probably is why they say they're open for business, but they're not actively shopping, they're going to listen to what the offers are. because you got to listen. And if something really makes sense, whether they're in the race or not, they trade a Duda, they trade a Cabrera, you know, they trade a Reed, and they say, okay, we got to make this deal because if we pass this up, it would be foolish, and there's not enough of a guarantee that this group is going to be anything more than, in best case scenario, meaningful games in September, maybe one game in the playoffs, which to me it counts as the playoffs, but it doesn't really in my world. The play-in game is a play into the playoffs. To be a wild card team, it's not the playoffs. So you could make, as a general manager, you could make a lot of mistakes in this kind of 2-3 week stance in the new world of two wild cards. It was always a chance you could make that kind of mistake with one wild card. Now with two, you can make that mistake, and the Mets can make it. So as hopeful as you may be after the horrible series against the Dodgers and the sweep of the Giants and the 2 out of 3 of the Marlins and the 2 out of 3 of the Phillies, there's still a lot of work to be done here, and they're not even at 500, and they probably won't get to 500 even if they play well this week going into the All-Star break, which I had said that was what the goal for – if I was – what my goal would be. Even if they win 4 out of 6, they're going to go into the break 3 under. And that's not going to be easy. You've got to go into St. Louis, who's playing better, Washington, which is always going to be a tough place despite how compromised they are. And you got to win 4 or 6, and you got to do it. And I don't want to hear, well, if they lose 5 out of 6. Well, you know, we'll take a blow, and we'll go into the All-Star break, and we'll be back. Like, there's no more blows. There's no more relaxing. There's no more of that. And I'm not, you know, I don't even want to entertain playoff talk because I told you a couple of podcasts ago that I'm done with that. I don't do that kind of stuff here. I don't just try to have these unrealistic paths to success just to have them, just to have hope for a Mets fan on the other end listening. But there is a path. It's a very difficult path, and it's an unlikely path. And I think if you go to Fangraphs, what is it, a 15% maybe chance to make the playoffs, but it's not zero. But 15 is not 85, and 15 is not something that's guaranteed. So there's still a lot here that could happen, but I'm very concerned that this run may be a false hope for this team, and then they may, you know, God forbid, keep the manager, not make changes in the front, the coaching staff at the end of the year, maybe make a trade to bring somebody in, gives up a piece or a prospect that may not make sense just to go out and make a run here. That's usually not – with Sandy Alderson being irresponsible like that, usually not his MO. If anything, he's too conservative. But this kind of situation is always a time where you have to be very careful about how you invest in your team, and you have to be very realistic about the team that you have. And right now, a new hope or a false hope or whatever you want to call it very well may be what we're faced with. Because I'm not sure, and yesterday on Sunday was a perfect example. Anytime this team sucks in, they kind of look bad. They kind of look like a second-division club, and they looked like a second-division club yesterday. And that's what they've been all year, a second-division club. Forget the games back. Forget the wild card. Forget that the National League has played down in some cases. If you go to outside of the top four teams, everybody else has played down from the level you might expect. So we'll see. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, Zach Brazilla of the New York Post. I had a chance to catch up with him before the Mets took on the Phillies at Citi Field, so you'll hear from him. Let's hear. Is this the reason for hope? He's been around the team the last few days, and he spent a lot of time this spring around the team. Normally does college basketball, but he's been covering baseball, so we'll get a chance to see what Zach has to say. And then later on, I caught up with Chris, our buddy from MetsMorizedOnline.com, former college athlete, has a lot to say about the Barwis method and the Mets strength and conditioning program, and maybe why Ron Darling went off on the broadcast earlier this week or last week and really had taken some issues with how baseball players are being trained right now by trainers and probably not being trained to be successful in the sport that they're in, maybe more for a beach body or for football, but not the sport that they're in. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva, each and every week. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Leave me a review on iTunes. It would be greatly appreciated. We'll be back with Zach Brazilla of the New York Post right after this.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. Metsmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Metsmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsmerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get Metsmerized today.
We're back, and joining us live from Citi Field before the Mets take on the Philadelphia Phillies in the series finale, short homestand before they go out on a road trip leading up to the All-Star break, is Zach Brazilia of the New York Post. You can follow him on Twitter at the New York NY Post underscore Brazil, B-R-A-Z-I-L-L-E. Zach, normally we talk college basketball with you, but you've been covering the Mets the last few weeks, so let me ask you this. It's been an odd start to the year, a week left before the All-Star break. Is there a new hope? I personally wrote them off about 10 days ago. They've gone 7-3. Maybe I'm the mush, or in a good way. And I know the competition has been lousy, but the Colorado Rockies have come back down to earth. The Nationals have some injuries. Is there a new hope and a new feeling around the team over at Citi Field?
I mean, I think there's some positive vibes. But I, you know, for me personally, I think we got to see a lot more. Like we said, I mean, these last, you know, including today, these last nine games have come against three of the worst teams in the sport: the Giants, Marlins, and now the Phillies. So I mean, I think we need to see more. We've seen good signs. You know, Granderson's been red hot. The pitching, especially Matt's, Lugo and DeGrom, has been good. I don't think there's any question about it. But I also think we need to take this with a grain of salt. The opposition has not been good. You know, let's say they win today and then they go win 4 of 6 next week in D.C. and St. Louis, then maybe there is something there. You know, they would be, I think if they went did that, they would be 1 under at the All-Star break. So, but to me, let's see what they do next week. You know, this team could easily lose 5 of 6 next weekend, and then it's back to, you know, that's what they are. So, I think that's a great point.
That's a great point. It actually segues into my next question, is that this is a dangerous kind of situation because the Mets have said they're open for business, but they haven't really committed to selling. And with today's game, with the way that there's two wild cards, you could really mess around for half a season, give or take, and be considered a contender. I mean, there are teams that are under 500 at the trading deadline that are considered quote-unquote contenders because maybe they're 5 or 6 games out of a wild card, and in reality they're not because you never see a path to them ever getting to 500. With this Mets team, it's a little different. In your opinion, if the worst-case scenario happens where, let's say they win today, but then they go out on the road and get clobbered by St. Louis and Washington, I don't know if it's in their best interest to pretend, even if they're still 8-9 games out of both the wild card and the division, pretend that there's something here because that's telling you against superior competition, this team can't cut the mustard.
Yeah, I mean, but I also think people are a little rushing into this too. You know, it's not July 25th right now. You don't have to know 100% by this week, by next week, are we sellers or buyers? You know, Sandy Alderson has repeatedly said there really is no market at the moment. You know, you don't really see a lot of trades happen. But let's be honest, too. It's not like they're going to be turning around and trading DeGrom or Mats anyway. You know, so they would be trading, you know, a Duda, a Reed. I mean, with all the money coming off the books, there's no reason this team cannot have a quick rebuild if they went out and got a few legit players in the offseason. Now, that's obviously, with the way the ownership runs this team, you never know what's going to happen. Are they going to put that money that comes off the books, think about $65, $70 million back into the team? So what I'm saying is that you're not looking at a massive rebuild. You're looking at trading some expiring contracts of veterans who probably won't be back anyway. So I don't really understand the need for people to say today or next week we're selling. There's still plenty of time to determine whether they should be selling assets or not. And don't forget, some of these guys who leave, you're going to probably get a pick in return anyway. So I don't see the need to right now have to know, are we going to buy, are we going to sell? I think there's plenty of time to decide.
What a difference a week makes for Estrubel Cabrera. A week ago, wants to be traded, doesn't want to play second base, and now he's hitting game-winning home runs. And he actually looked pretty good at second base. And with Neil Walker, a free agent at the end of the year, and with a player option and a reasonable one on Cabrera, and he's looked awful at shortstop at times this year, and we know his issues with range and with Rosario and the waiting in the wings, maybe this is a decent second base option for next year.
You know, I felt all along that the big issue with Cabrera is how, I mean, you saw it last year when he went on the DL and he came back and he was a different player. You know, this guy's healthy. He could hit. He's a good hitter. It's not a question about it. And I think maybe he's been able to relax a little bit being at second base and not have to worry about, you know, all the questions about his defense. And, you know, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, I go into that year thinking the Mets have four holes: catcher, center field, third base, and second base. You know, whether you're playing, bringing back Dude to play first, or you're going to speak of the job to Don Switch, you have four open spots. You're not going to go out and get four new players. So, well, I think it's realistic to expect them to go out and get two legit players for two of those spots. And then, you know, there's nothing wrong with just playing Cabrera at second. I mean, the guy is he's not, you know, because of the way he moves, sometimes he looks like he's 35, and he's 31 years old. So, you know, I agree. I don't think that would be a bad position at all. He would help mentor Rosario. Granted, Rosario is the shortstop opening day next year, which you would think, but obviously we don't know that.
Absolutely. I have with me Zach Brazilia of the New York Post. He's out in Citi Field covering the Mets, catching up with him on this week's podcast before the final game of the series. And really, when you look at the team and, you know, the players that, you know, you would trade, in a market where there's so much offense out there, it's actually pitching that teams would want, and that's what the Mets need, ironically enough. And offensively, I'm going up and down the lineup here, even though Travis d'Arnaud hasn't had a good year. You know, he's really the weak link on the offense. I mean, this is a potent lineup, much different than last year. Now you have a rotation. You have DeGrom, who seems to be coming into form. Mattson, Lugo, that's a pretty solid 1, 2, and 3. I'm not counting on Syndergaard at all. Now here's where it gets tricky. What version of Montero will we see? We'll know later today. And what's going on with Zach Wheeler, who earlier in the year was a good for six solid innings. Now, whether it's tendonitis, he's hit a wall, you know, maybe the league has caught up to him. I've never been a huge Zach Wheeler guy from day one. He seems to not be able to get through those 5-6 innings that he was earlier in the year. A little bit better yesterday, but not where you want him to be. The rotation is really the big question. What are you hearing around there? What are they saying about Wheeler, and how important is today's start from Montero? Because, you know, quite frankly, you know, he's got to show something. Even though he had a nice game last week, he's got to start to show something that he could be a serviceable part of the rotation, because he hasn't even been that so far in his career.
I mean, you got to look at, too, to be fair, Montero. He had two very good outings in the bullpen as well, where he was throwing a lot of strikes and looked like a different pitcher. So to me, it's three outings in a row where he's looked more like the guy we've heard about for years. But yeah, of course, but he needs to do more. He needs to pitch more. He needs to throw more strikes. But here's the thing with Montero, and the reason they've given him, you know, it feels like about 38 chances. He has still very good stuff. The guy, he's thrown more of his changeup, which has been effective. He can get it up to 95, 96 with movement. His slider's not bad. He's not good stuff. I mean, there was a reason that all those years ago when the Subway Series, when they called up him in the ground, he was the guy everyone was talking about. DeGrom was kind of the, you know, we're calling this guy up to just for a spot starter to help in the bullpen. And obviously DeGrom has become one of the best pitchers in baseball. Montero's, you know, been so enigmatic and so just frustrating for the Mets, but the stuff is there, which is why they're still keeping him. I'm very interested to see how he pitches right now. The Phillies don't have a good lineup. We all know that. But to me, it's more about what Montero's doing, what he does. Because if he's going to pound the zone with his stuff, he's going to be okay. The problem is the guy, for his career in the majors, has been scared to throw the ball on the plate, has been intimidated by major league hitters. And we've seen different Montero the last three outings. You know, I got to say, I want to see another start from Wheeler. You know, his first start coming off the DL. You know, he obviously didn't pitch very deep, which has always been his issue. You know, throwing a million pitches, you know, 110 pitches over 5 1/3. But, you know, that's the thing with the Mets. You know, everyone came in the year thinking they're going to score a number of runs. I mean, their offense has been by far the best part of this team, which is remarkable considering what everyone worried about, you know, and then you look at, you know, they didn't have Cespedes for 8 weeks. They've had a million injuries. You know, Duda was on the DL. Flores, now it's in Florida. The offense has been, you know, sparse, surpassed expectations. I don't think it's a great offense, but I think it's more than good enough if you're getting decent pitching. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, they're set up very nicely with National Series. They have the three best pitchers going. All they see is Strasburg. They get Joe Ross and Tanner Roark, neither of whom are very good. Both have ERAs over 5. You know, the Mets, meanwhile, get Lugo, Mats, and DeGrom. If the series on paper, the Mets should be able to take 2 or 3. And the Nats are not playing well now. They just lost their leadoff hitter, Trey Turner, for probably 2 months. The bullpen's a mess. The Mets had there for them to win 2 games. We'll see. But there's optimism. You know, I don't want to throw cold water on it because, you know, they win today. It's 8 of 9. And, you know, that's good baseball. Let's see this last week. To me, this last week is very intriguing before the All-Star break. If they can go and win 4 of 6 after winning today, they'd be 1 game under .500. And coming out of it, I think they play the Rockies at home. And so that would be an opportunity for them to gain ground. So, you know, we'll see. But there definitely is more optimism now than there's been in a while.
I agree with that. You very well said. This is today's a critical game. It's a critical week, and recharge, get back at it after the All-Star break. They can't mess around anymore. The bullpen, I know Addison Reed is probably not available today. You know, we'll see who closes. You got Sewald, who I really like. He's been up and down, but his numbers aren't – really, the peripherals are a lot better than the numbers suggest. Jerry Blevins, we know what he's done. Josh Edgen has been solid. They need another arm. You know, I know Familia is not going to be back for another month, and it seems like that's going to be sooner rather than later. But the name Bartolo Colon keeps getting brought up, and Sandy Alderson has been coy about it. Bartolo did a nice job in the bullpen in the playoffs. He's not your typical reliever, but he is who is available, assuming he clears waivers, and I believe he will, with that $12-plus million. Is that what you see as maybe a short-term viable option to help this bullpen that desperately, desperately needs a consistent arm, especially for the 6th and 7th inning? They just don't have that now. It has not been Fernando Salas, and who knows about Eric Goodell and Jason Bradford. They need somebody, and you wonder if Bartolo Colon is that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're interested. Colon's numbers would really worry me. He basically was a punching bag at the Braves. I'd like to see a little more of Bradford. You know, the Familia does sound like he's a little ahead of pace. He's supposed to go down to Florida, I think, tomorrow to start a throwing program. So he could be a month away. So you could be getting him back right after the trade deadline. And that would obviously be a big addition. You know, now Gesselman's out a while. I really did not quite get why they went to a 6-man. I would have put Gesselman in the bullpen. He looks very good in the bullpen. You know, he had a few outings there, and then they put in the rotation. He had a few pretty good starts, and then he went back in the tank. I think Gesselman has bullpen written all over him. I think he wears down in games. But now he's obviously going to be out for a while with the hamstring. They clearly need to do something. I don't think Colon would be a terrible idea. You know, I thought before the injuries came, I thought Montero in the bullpen could have been decent. If he throws strikes the way he's been throwing lately. Yeah, I mean, they're very thin in the bullpen. We all know that. Now, Reed's been terrific. Blevins has been terrific. You know, The numbers for Seawold aren't great, but that's because he's had one or two just brutal outings. But besides that, he's been very consistent. He's really, really saved them. But yeah, I mean, I would like to give Bradford more of a look. I think we've all seen enough of Salas. Salas should be a mop-up guy or be used in maybe a fifth inning. You know, he's proven time and again he's not reliable. You know, Hansel Robles at AAA has just been not good at all. He's been blowing up. So, yeah, I mean, they don't have a lot of options. That's the thing. Their pitch, starting pitching, part of the reason they've been winning these games lately is their starting pitching has been giving them 7-8 innings. And we all know that's usually a key to a good bullpen, is good starting pitching.
Last thing before I let you go, it looks like they're going to get Terry Collins off the mat. Every time I think that he's on the ropes and everyone realizes that, you know, every night, that's the weak link. The other manager is usually better in the dugout. The Mets seem to charge back. Has not been a good year for Terry on a lot of fronts, but he hangs in there. And if they do get back into this thing, you got to wonder, you know, manager for life almost here. It seems like every time you count Terry out, the team responds and they pull you back in there.
Yeah, his time here is it's very very perplexing when you look at it because he, you know, especially the last few years, his teams have shown a ton of resiliency, which you got to give him credit for. But to me, it's, you know, if you're going to rip his in-game maneuvers and all that stuff, which I do, and to me it's fair to do, you got to give him credit for the resilience they've shown here the last 3 years. You know, his use of the bullpen is head scratching. I don't think there's any question about it. His lineups are sometimes confusing. But you know what? The other thing is, you know, everyone who's always falling for his head and falling for his up, that's not standing them up. He doesn't make rash decisions. Terry's contract runs out at the end of the year. Unless, you know, I always thought, unless they lost like 15 of 20 or went on this huge, huge losing streak, he wasn't getting fired. They're going to let him at least coach out the year. No secret, Fred Wilton loves Terry. You know, he takes bullets for the organization all the time. But that, to me, is probably the thing they love the most about him. He's the one in the press conference who takes the hits for why is Rosario not up and, you know, why are the injuries handled this way. And also, his teams have shown a lot of toughness, you know. We saw it last year where they found a way to get a wild card. We're seeing it again this year with all these injuries, with underperformance, and his team is not going away. You can say what you want about the schedule. Here's the other thing. I think people who said this Mets team isn't very good, and I don't agree. I don't think they're a great team either. I don't think they're a terrible team. I don't think they're a good team. But look at the National League. Look at how many bad teams there are. The league is littered with it. You have about five good teams, you know, and then you have a lot of mediocrity. So the Mets, I don't think they're a playoff team. They still probably get to low to mid-80s wins just because of they're still better than a ton of these teams out there.
Yeah, absolutely, keeping them in the race. Hey, so you're covering the Mets. Obviously, you're a big college basketball guy. That's quite a few months away. What are the listeners, what do you got coming up? What can they follow? What are you going to be doing this summer over at the New York Post? Give us all the details.
I mean, it's, you know, right now it's basically all baseball. I'll be at the Yankees tomorrow. You know, basically Mets and Yankees, and at the end of July training camp starts, and I'll be out there with the hopefully more of the Giants than the Jets. Yeah, you know, basically baseball and then training camp and then some college football. But I'm excited for college hoops. You're going to have Seton Hall's going to be a top 20 team. I think St. John's could be in the mix for the NCAA tournament. Manhattan's going to be very good. I think Hofstra's going to be good. Iona's always good. Rutgers should be a little better. So to me, it's going to be a fantastic local season for college basketball. It's all amazing to be one of the better years we've had in a while.
All right. Enjoy the game. Appreciate a few minutes, man. Let's catch up. Happy 4th of July, all right?
All right, man. Have a good one, man.
Take care. That's Zach Brazilda of the New York Post at NYPost_Brazil, B-R-A-I. Actually, let me get this for you right there. Zach Brazilda. B-R-A-Z-I-L-L-E at NYPost_Brazil. So, good stuff. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to get into the Mets' handling of injuries. Ron Darling's comments. You'll hear that in just a minute. And our buddy Chris from MetsMemorizedOnline.com, who has been pretty critical on both Twitter and on MetsMemorizedOnline.com when he has written over there about the Mets and the Barwis method and Mike Barwis, who runs the strength and conditioning program over there. And a lot of that has come out this week because of Darling's comments, another injury as Robert Gzelman was injured running down to first base over in Miami. So Chris and I will talk about that. I think there's some interesting stuff and definitely get you thinking about whether one of the issues with this team has been how they handle, how they prepare, how they prevent injuries. It's been a topic for a while. Not sure that right now Barwis and his team are the answer. Anyway, let's take a quick break. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, you can check out the show all the time at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If I'm not on one, let me know, and I'll get on there. We'll be back. Let's talk a little bit about the Mets injury protocol right after this.
Gets them in a room with some of the old trainers and people that took care of baseball players and how to keep them healthy, and get them in a room and try to tap into some of their knowledge on how you train baseball players. Not weightlifters, not six-pack wearers, baseball players. They're doing a disservice to their million-dollar athletes that they're paying. It's a joke to watch this happen each and every night.
We're back, and you just heard the words of Ron Darling, and another injury this week for the Mets. And it's been a topic of conversation. Actually, a year ago, I have our buddy from MetsMemorizedOnline.com, Chris the teacher. He's written a couple of pieces over there. He's been on Twitter pretty open of his criticisms of the Mets' strength and conditioning and some of the practices they use to get players on the field, keep them on the field. And what better guy to bring on, because just about a year ago around this time, we were talking about David Wright and his injuries, and Chris pretty much nailed that one. So why not bring him on, and let's talk about the latest and greatest when it comes to strength and conditioning and health with the New York Mets. Then Chris from MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Chris, how you doing? Mike Silva, what's the good word, my friend?
Hey, Mike, how we doing? Just enjoying this 4th of July weekend here, seeing if the Mets can finish off the sweep today, the Phils.
Are you going to the game and hanging out with Mike Barwis at all, or is it just you taking some watching the game from home with some beers?
I'll be watching the game at home as Barwis does the same from Florida and collecting his checks for continually hamstringing both literally and metaphorically the baseball club.
Well, that's the first shot at the bat. Now, here's the important part, and I know that there's many who probably are familiar with you that are listening, but there may be someone hearing you for the first time. So you're a former college athlete, so you're not just somebody that decided one day, you know, I don't like Mike Barwis, I don't like what's going on with the Mets, let me go to Wikipedia, look some things up. You know, I'm not a former college athlete, I don't know kinesiology. All I could do is listen to those that do know. What I do know is this, just as a novice, if you're lifting weights to have a beach body, like Sean T and all the other insanity, which I've done those workouts, somehow I'm not sure that's exactly what you should be doing if you want to pitch seven innings, stay on the field for 162 games in 180 days, and you have been pretty open about that.
Well, look, there's a program for everybody, and any program really could work for anybody, but the issue is here that you're dealing with athletes that for the most part are players that are stationary and then explode to movement at random times, whether it be while they're pitching, whether it be while they're standing in the field bursting to first base, or whether they're in the batter's box swinging and then running to first base. You have players that are at rest then exploding into motion. So explosive workouts are fine to practice those type of things, but the issue is that if you're creating a muscle imbalance, if you're working out your quads too much and ignoring strengthening and stretching of the hamstrings. If you're working out your core, your abs too much, and you're ignoring the quads or the hamstrings and creating muscle imbalance, which Barwis is very famous for doing, that's when you run into problems with explosive type of athletes, because you have bodies that are not in balance, that are exploding, and something has to give. It's part of your whole body is based on a rubber band, and it's going to start pulling and pulling and pushing in one direction, something else.
Well, you know, it kind of goes back, and it goes back to the 90s where you had players that were taking steroids, didn't know what they were doing, were building a ton of body mass, and you saw as the mid-90s to the late 90s to the turn of the century, there were players that broke down. I remember Ken Caminiti, who was a known steroid user, his body just started to break down because it couldn't handle, as to your point, the imbalance. And again, I'm not saying these guys are taking steroids, but they're doing weightlifting. You see an injury with Noah Syndergaard. The most famous one would be all winter. You saw Cespedes working out, doing extreme weightlifting, especially with his legs. I think even ESPN did something on him about that. And sure enough, he's been pretty gimpy all year. Let's put it that way. He didn't look like a guy who was a finely tuned athlete.
No, definitely not. Especially he's doing what's called bear squats, which for his weight and his goals. That video right there, anybody inside the industry of strength and conditioning will tell you it's completely contradictory. There's no reason for him to be doing that explosive movement with that amount of weight. You obviously want to have lower weight with that sort of explosive, fast movement. The use of – it's funny because they highlighted – I believe it was an ESPN Sunday night game, and they highlighted Cespedes using those pressure pants for recovery – which is not that at all. It's actually just more stress on the legs. You don't do that for recovery. You do that as part of your workout. And look, the guy Barwis, to give a little bit of a backstory, this is a guy who was pushed on the Wilpons or suggested by the Wilpons, his previous employer, University of Michigan strength conditioning for the football program. There were some NCAA investigations there. There were allegations about Barwis destroying documents during the investigation about time served for athletes. And eventually, when the head coach of Michigan left and Barwis left, the Mets start to bring him into the fold a little bit closer. He's been with the club for years, but then he's eventually hired. He replaces a man who was doing a fantastic job as a strength and conditioning coordinator named Jim Malone. Jim Malone, in his 2 years with the club, decreased the amount of man games lost due to injury significantly. Barwis' first year in, the number triples. Now, you do have some room for error there because you have some pitchers that blow out some ligaments. That happens. But, I mean, the number triples the first year Barwis is there, specifically among the players that he's training on a one-to-one basis at his facility, which is on the Mets campus in Port St. Lucie. This is another problem that exists here because now you have the Mets who have employed this man to oversee their strength conditioning program for the entire organization, and he has a facility in their grounds, in their spring training grounds in Port St. Lucie.
And if you remember, there was that controversial article. This is probably before they hired him. He was a consultant at the beginning, where they were charging players to use his methods, and then the article came out with the Mets are cheap. Well, no, the Mets are. He's a consultant. He doesn't work for the team. So if he's going to do extra work, he's going to charge for it. I can't blame him for that. That's on the Mets and the optics of that. But his background, he was director of strength and conditioning for the University of West Virginia. Then he went, like you said, to the University of Michigan. And then what's interesting –
Following the head football coach, Rich Rodriguez, is who he's following. Rich Rodriguez brought him along. That's his guy.
Right. So, I mean, he has – in your opinion, as a former football player, the things that he's doing, are you comfortable if the Mets were a professional football team? Is it that they're doing football training for baseball? Is that a way of looking at it?
Like I said, there's programs for everybody and everything. His program is fine. But the problem is the way that it's not being counterbalanced with better stretching. and better flexibility programs. Which, bringing it back to that article you talked about, is either the Journal or the Times. Think about that as the incumbent strength and conditioning coach. You're being paid by the organization, like a guy that Jim Malone's being paid by the organization, and you have the organization sending its players to a different strength and conditioning coach instead of you, who, and they're paying you. I mean, that's a classic Mets double take, because it's they're sort of contradicting themselves. And eventually Malone's dismissed, Barwas is brought on. Now Barwas is not with the club on a day-to-day basis. They have Dustin Clark, who is in charge of the Mets strength conditioning programs on a day-to-day basis. What Dustin Clark does is he implements Barwas's programs, because he has no ability to create his own programs, because he has no experience above intern on any level on any organization. So this is an intern in charge of the strength conditioning program for the New York Mets organization, which is it's shocking.
No, it's especially with everything. And look, I you, to your point, this probably falls more into the offensive players. The pitchers, it's a different thing. I mean, you saw some things about Jacob DeGrom starting to work on mechanics in between starts and throwing. But, you know, Noah Syndergaard with the weightlifting, and although the Mets claim he didn't gain whatever it was, 17 pounds, I don't know who to believe. Why would somebody say that if they didn't do that? Do you think that that probably is starting to spill into the pitchers, namely Syndergaard, who tears a lat, not the end-of-the-world injury, not a shoulder. But again, if you're doing heavy weightlifting, if I'm a pitcher, the last thing I want to do is tear a labrum. I talked to Dylan G. He actually, in college, tore a labrum, and that's why he's had arm trouble. He told me that when I spoke to him in college, weightlifting. So you can hurt yourself in the shoulder, and as you know, Chris, you know, shoulder injury, and I don't know if that has something to do with Harvey's scapula, the strain. Those are the harder ones to come back from. Elbows are bad, but they're doable. Shoulders, that changes everything. So this is starting to bleed into what the strength of the team is in the pitching.
And, you know, what you really want to look out for, specifically if you're talking about Barwas, is anything core-related. If it's a quad, if it's a hip, if it's a hamstring, if it's a glute, if it's an oblique, even with Syndergaard's lat, there's something to be said there about muscle imbalance that's being created. Gazelman blows out a hamstring last week. This is a guy who's trained with Barwas. Now, hamstrings happened before. And what I also thought was telling in his post-game comments is Gazelman says that he's had hamstring injuries before. The best predictor of future injury is past injury. So if I'm Gazelman's strength coach and I know he has a hamstring issue and he's had them in the past, and you get a full workup of a guy when he becomes your client, this is something that I would be working around, and I'd be making sure flexibility is, one of the main things that we're trying to target. Not bulk, not strength, not explosiveness, but flexibility to make sure these hamstrings, which now have scar tissue in them if he's torn them or pulled them before, have to be flexible. And I just don't think that he does that. I think he's more concerned with putting up the video of the explosiveness, putting up the video with his guys wearing his name on the back of his T-shirt, selling his brand, selling his supplements.
And that's to wrap up here and get the final point, this is very much a sales organization, the Barwas method. You go on the website, I mean, there's the shopping and videos, almost like a cultish type video, like, hey, look at what I've done. I know he's helped some people who are injured, and things like that. And like you said, not everything is bad, but it is odd that he worked for the Mets, then he took the job of the Mets, but while he's been working for the Mets back in 2014, 2015, he was also consulting the Miami Dolphins. That's stretching somebody pretty thin. Now, what he's basically probably saying is, I have the program and I have the people to execute the program, just execute the program. You never need to see him. To me, if I'm Sandy Alderson, I rather work with somebody who have somebody that's dedicated to my organization. It's essentially like moonlighting. I mean, at some point, you're distracted. And you look at this timeline here. Now, it seems like he's with the Mets now totally and solely, but he's still working the sales organization. You go to thebarwasmethods.com and you can get pretty much anything you want. It's like almost like a kind of like a group type of thing, like get involved in this group type of thing.
Well, you know, the one thing I think that is the big red flag is that you have a guy, like I said, that's in charge of the day-to-day operations, his intern, Dustin Clark, who has no experience as a leader of men, who has no experience of how are you feeling today, what are you feeling, can we talk about this, let's look at your program, let's modify the program. All he does is he takes what is given to him by the boss and implements it. It's very rare that you have somebody working in a Major League Baseball organization as the head of something with no experience doing it. And look, a lot of guys want to point to Ray Ramirez. I'll be the first to tell you, I've had people that have dealt with Ray specifically. He is one of the best in the business. When people run out, people start booing him when he runs out to the field, he is not the problem. The Mets deal with the Hospital for Special Surgery. These are the best doctors on the planet Earth. And so unless there's anywhere else that they can go, they're not going to get any better treatment. There is a disconnect right now between the way Will Pons and the way Sandy Alderson takes advice from doctors and implements their own course of action. There is a disconnect there right now. And to be honest with you, it's probably giving the Hospital for Special Surgery a headache because it's not making them look the best, and it's making Ray Ramirez look terrible. This poor guy who's been on the forefront of this, and he's been through – if a guy had been through as many regime changes as Ray Ramirez has, that should tell you that he's probably pretty good at what he does because he's been here for about 12 to 15 years. So he obviously is not part of the problem. I think that the problem rests in the program that's being created by a guy who is more interested in selling T-shirts, a guy who sees the Mets on a day-to-day basis, who has no experience being a leader of men or creator of a strength program, and a disconnect between the doctors, the ownership, and the player. And it's rampant, and it's getting worse and worse, and I don't see it changing until major changes happen at the top.
And it even goes back to the whole DL thing. They did it with Conforto. They just don't like the DL players. I don't know if they just want them to push it through. Again, if Conforto's bone wasn't broke and there's a deep bone bruise with a 10-day DL, to me it's almost like, what are you doing here? I mean, that's the point of the 10-day DL. And everyone's going to say Ray Ramirez, he doesn't diagnose this stuff. They'll
exactly.
Say the doctors. I find it hard to believe that the Hospital Special Surgery and the doctors that the Mets employ are going to be, you know, these dopey narratives that the media put out there are going to be this cast of clowns that are just going to say, they're not using, 1942 x-ray machines here. I mean, that's the thing. So you're right. You know, I could give you medical advice, Chris, and you could say, yes, doc, and then you go out and do what you want, and then what are you going to do? You're going to blame the doctor. Or the organization is going to tell the player, well, yeah, that's what the doctor said, but the player at the end of the day has a right to a second opinion. But, you know, especially if you're a young player, they're very concerned. And I know this because I've spoken to players. They're very concerned about getting cut, sent down, or released when they don't have any leverage if they don't follow the team's direction. That's very prevalent, and I don't think fans realize that.
Exactly. And how many times have we seen it in the sense that, okay, we're gonna wait a day and reevaluate, we're going to wait a day and reevaluate. Now you have a situation of Michael Conforto where he is going to spend as much time on the DL, 5 days, as he did inactive with the club, 5 days. And your club played with 24 guys. I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I was in and out. I was at the game yesterday, and I was in and out, but Jacob deGrom had the pinch run yesterday.
Yes, he did.
After throwing that gem on Friday night. And that's what happens when you're carrying 24. And that's what happens when you're short a bench player. And it's very – what if he comes up on – he could hit a base. He doesn't expect to play that day. He could hit a base if he's forced to open it up and hit a base the wrong way and blow a hamstring, and especially with the history that we've seen.
Yeah, you're carrying a lot of relievers. I mean, that's becoming a bigger problem with the amount of relievers that teams need to employ. And part of it is, and this is a whole separate subject, we could go on for another 30 minutes, whatever, you got to push starters to go deeper. I mean, the fact that you got to run out there at 100 pitches like they get shot, if they don't get off the mound is ridiculous. So – you've been pretty accurate, man. You were accurate about David Wright. He has not seen the light of day since our podcast last year. You've been on this Barwas thing. I know Barwas probably follows you on Twitter, and I know that I think that they're starting to get some rabbit ears on this. I have a feeling that the more
that was
talked about. I don't know if Barwas will make a statement. I know Sandy Alderson has been the one saying, "Hey, we still trust the almost trust the process," but don't be surprised that you know, Barber starts to fight back on this, because you're not going to have a sales-centric organization like this that's intent on selling the dream, and your prized client, the New York Mets, the fans of that team, and essentially the media at some point are starting to tarnish it. That's gonna have him fight back a little bit at some point.
And look, God bless Ronnie for his comments. They were true and they were honest. There are so many folks out there that confuse the strength and conditioning coach with the athletic trainer. If an athletic trainer, like you said, is not his job to diagnose injuries or to be in the weight room with these guys on a day-to-day basis. His job is just to prep the room. His job is to prep the training room for guys to get treatment on nagging injuries, guys to get stretched out. And Ronnie is a guy who, yeah, he's an award-winning broadcaster, but he's a guy that once you turn the mics off, and I know you've spoken to him too, he's a guy who's going to tell you what he thinks about the club. And it's not always going to be glowing. And I think he did that publicly, and I was very happy for it because it had to be said. Somebody had to say it. And, you know, some people are saying that he's being too critical of the club. I think it's great. I think because he has the athlete's take, and he knows that a guy's playing days are finite. And if the guy's best interests in the weight room are not being put into forefront, guys are losing valuable days of their career. They're losing valuable starts and valuable games. And he doesn't want to see that happen in these young kids. And I think that's what irked him the most. And that's why I loved his honesty on it.
No, you're right. I wish the beat would do the same thing. I wish the media would pick up on this Barwa stuff. I have a feeling they may start to at some point. Hey, before I let you go, you got anything going on? I know you sell tickets and you got a bunch of stuff going on. I don't know if you have anything going on at MetsMemorizedOnline.com, but let the listeners know what's the latest and the greatest.
If anybody ever needs tickets to see a game, we beat every price, fee-free NYC. You could find a link to the site on my Twitter handle. We're getting about 2 to 3 clients a day, and most of them are coming back for more. You don't pay any fees. The price you see is the price you pay, and they're season ticket holder seats, so they're always going to be in the best rows and the best locations. Come and try us.
All right, man. Have a good 4th of July. I appreciate you being generous with your time. I'm sure you want to get back out to fun in the sun and watch some baseball, so let's catch up again. All righty?
Yes, I will be out in Seattle in a few weeks and hope to reconnect with you after that. It'll be right at the trading deadline, so I think it'll be an interesting time.
That'll be fun. Enjoy that. What is that, a 6-hour flight? That probably the worst flight in all of the United States. 6 hours, that's going to take to get from New York?
6 hours, but that's why you fly into Delta Comfort, free food and drinks.
Right. Chris, enjoy the rest of your weekend, man. Thanks a lot.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. That's Chris from MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Interesting stuff. Look, I'm not an expert on this stuff. I like to bring people on who know what they're talking about. And I think Chris does, and I know he's tweeted about it. I know he's written about it. Not everybody likes what he has to say, but we like to talk about all this stuff, and I thought Chris did a really nice job, so hopefully you enjoyed that. Hey, I'm out of time. I hope everybody first has a great 4th of July. I don't know if you're taking off today or, you know, it's kind of an odd weekend where you have 4th of July on a Tuesday. But maybe you're taking off today. I don't know when you're listening to this. The Mets are obviously have some interesting games. They're going to be playing the Nationals at an 11 a.m. game tomorrow on 4th of July. So you basically by 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, can watch some baseball in the morning with your breakfast, get the barbecue fired up, and enjoy the rest of your day, which is always a cool thing. Sometimes sports kind of gets in the way of socializing and enjoying your day, especially if you're into a game and it's not going well. It kind of ruins some of those holidays. So enjoy that, and I will be back on Sunday, and we'll have the All-Star break, so we'll kind of assess this team. I'll try to figure out something that we can do to assess this team. On the not official, the official halfway point is already hit, but the unofficial halfway point of the baseball season. You've got 50% of the season left here to go, so we'll do that on Sunday, and we'll have some fun. Maybe we'll do something with the All-Star game. I'll have to think about what makes sense and who's available and what we could get done. And we'll see. You know, this is a critical week. No nonsense. I don't want to hear any rationalizations if they go out there and lose. They have to win these two series. I don't even know if playing 500 is acceptable. I really don't. I think they have to make some ground getting into the All-Star break if you want to take any of this quote-unquote new hope, false hope, whatever you want to talk about it, and make it stick and make it real. I want to thank Zach Brazilla of the New York Post, of course, for joining us earlier. I also want to thank Chris, our buddy, Chris the Teacher, who also has appeared over at MetsMorrisOnline.com. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out at Mike Silva Media, and you can check out the show at MetsMorrisOnline.com. All the time. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend. I'll be back on Sunday. Take care, everybody.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.